Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tomorrow night, the Chicago Symphony Center continues their jazz series with Grammy Award-winning trumpet virtuoso and multi-instrumentalist Nicholas Payton. Payton hails from New Orleans, one of the biggest names to come out of that great music city. He started playing trumpet at 4 years old, and he's been touring since he was 11. What were you doing when you were 11? He won the Grammy for Best Jazz Solo back in 1998. He's taken the genre in several different directions in his career. I mean, he's played standards and classicals and tributes, and he's blended sounds. But what he's doing right now is taking the sounds from his hometown. And in his latest work, he has put together the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape, which is a double album. It's got a little bit of bebop swing, the Great American Songbook, rhythm and blues, hip-hop, and various dialects of Central America and the Caribbean, brought together in a way only Nicholas Payton can. Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape will be on stage tomorrow night, 8 p.m. at the Symphony Center downtown here in Michigan Avenue. And it is my pleasure to welcome Nicholas Payton to the download. He's at the big table tonight. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you, Justin. How you doing, bro?
Where does this come from, this idea of blending all of this music together? Because you have done so much in your career, but you really put an emphasis on the idea of taking music in a different direction.
To me, it's not about blending as much as it is restructuring and reunifying things that were meant to be together in the first place. That genre has sought to kind of separate and marginalize. So that's what this whole album is about, is bringing together all African roots and all black music back to its original source, Africa, and sort of saying that these are all what people call genres, like bebop and swing, hip-hop, funk, soul, R&B.
They all come from the same place, right?
Exactly. They all, even pop music, even the most banal, without listing any names, popular music that you on a radio owes a debt to not only Africa, but the world's first pop star, Louis Armstrong.
Really? Louis Armstrong?
He was the first king of pop. All due respect to Michael Jackson. But Louis Armstrong was that dude in 1925, 26 in this city, Chicago. He was in King Oliver's band, and they moved from New Orleans to here. And, like, you know, Chicago was the New York of his time. It was the epicenter. So before he moved to New York and, like, completely changed music there, he was here.
Doing it here, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of your music, and you hear it, and if you don't hear it, you can read the liner notes. But a lot of your history is, or a lot of the music's rooted in history. Has that always been the case for you? I mean, have you always had one eye on what's come before?
Yep. As the great Dizzy Gillespie said, keep one foot in the past, one foot in the future. And I'm the beneficiary of so many great masters' time and efforts. People like the great Clark Terry. Mm-hmm. We once played here at the Jazz Showcase when it was at the Blackstone Hotel.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Ahmad Jamal, who, like, you know, like, is the genesis of funk and hip-hop and so many things, who has roots here in Chicago. Elvin Jones, the first gig with Elvin Jones was here, again, at the Blackstone. And Joe Siegel and Wayne, they're still keeping that thing going over there. So it's always about roots and ancestry and elders and lineage when we talk about the tradition and so forth.
You know, for you, you do go out of your way to bust the genres. You know, like you're a lot of times you're classified as a jazz musician.
Right.
And you've gone out of your way to say, you know what, I don't necessarily see myself as a jazz musician, because jazz is a genre, like you just said, that is, right, that is constraints on that.
And like, not a good genre. Like, when you, is jazz something, it's okay if there are two people in a club. It's okay if you only sell 100 CDs. Like, nobody gets into this part of the business to do less and to be marginalized. You want more, and you want to have access to the most that you can possibly have.
Well, there was one time, such an interesting art form, that jazz was the pop.
I mean,
the
20s was branded the jazz age.
So the idea that at one point or another, jazz was a positive genre. I mean, people, you wanted to be associated with that.
I don't know about positive, but it had its term. I mean, when we look at the first jazz band recorded, it was the original Dixieland Jazz Band. And just in the title alone, there's so much wrong with that. Like, original, first of all, they were these, for lack of a better word, white cats appropriating black music, saying they were original. No. Dixieland, we know that has roots to antebellum South. Jazz, which is sort of a truncated version of jive, ASS music. Mm. So it's problematic for a lot of reasons.
Do you, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, and I want to get into your life, especially as we talk about how you got involved in the music in the first place, come from mm-hmm. a musical family, of course.
Sure.
But, I mean, is that something that was taught to you at a young age? That, you know, if you really truly looked at the genre that you were classified as a musician in, there are some negative stereotypes or some negative connotations just to the name jazz, as you just mentioned. I mean, is that something that you've understood as a young musician coming forward, or is it something that you know, and you were enlightened at an older age?
Yeah, I would say I was perhaps enlightened at an early age. It's funny, though, my trajectory, because initially I was kind of turned off by the idea of jazz as a young person coming up. And then around 11 or 12, I sort of got indoctrinated into jazz to like being in my late 30s and finding my way back to not really digging jazz so much. Because when I was in my youth, I just loved everything. Like, it was all music to me. My father, who played electric bass on a lot of early New Orleanian R&B hits like Lee Dorsey, Working on a Coal Mine, Aaron Neville, Tell It Like It Is. And at a certain point, he didn't want to play electric bass anymore and focus on upright bass. He also played sousaphone in a lot of brass bands. And then this cat, he would teach school in the morning from like 8 to 3 o'clock, the same elementary school I went to, do gigs, maybe sometimes 2 to 3 gigs, 5 to 7 somewhere, 8 to 10, and then midnight to 3, and then come home and practice Bach cello suites for 2 hours before he went to bed and wake up and teach the kids again and do the same thing. So there was never this distinction, you know, so that to me is a learned behavior, mm-hmm. this idea of a genre. It doesn't come from the artist.
It comes from the packaging. Yeah. It comes from the business.
They got to sell something and they got to call it what it is. But I think at least if you can brand yourself, that's at least a better start.
Right.
And that's my whole thing with BAM and Black American Music. If we have to have a brand in this very commercialized society, why not brand ourselves?
Yeah. Black American Music.
That's what it is.
Nicholas Payton, the trumpet virtuoso, here in town because he is playing at the Symphony Center downtown right here on Michigan Avenue. Tomorrow night, Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape will be on stage starting at 8 o'clock. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll talk more with musician Nicholas Payton. Stay with us.
Jazz is a four-letter word. Jazz is a four-letter word.
Jazz doesn't exist.
Jazz is a four-letter word. Jazz is a four-letter word.
Jazz doesn't exist.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Listen to a little Nicholas Payton, the musician from New Orleans. In town at the Chicago Symphony Center for their show tomorrow night, 8 o'clock at the Symphony Center. Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape, which is also the name of the double album, this track we're listening to here. You know, Nicholas, picking up on the conversation, so it's intriguing to me because, you know, when we talk about genres, you are absolutely right that we rarely ever hear an artist say they're a blank musician, a rock musician. I'm a rapper. You know, I'm a jazz musician. That's something that those labels have been put on musicians by not even the consumer, I would say, the business.
Yeah, and labels and so forth.
As you think more about that and you think about that, why isn't that something that is more discussed? Why don't you hear more artists say, you know, I don't put labels on myself, or I'm not a jazz musician, or I'm not a blues musician? What is it that's here? They're just keeping their head down?
I think the artists want to have gigs and they don't want to do anything to disturb that. You know,
and it's as simple as that, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty stupid in that way. Like, I kind of don't care. So, but I mean, I care, but the music and the love of the artists and the ancestry and the community, those are the most important things to me. And at the point of which we begin to sacrifice those things, it becomes something else. So like I have to soldier for this thing, mm-hmm. regardless of who else sees it or not.
Well, it's amazing as we saw the music industry kind of crumble in the 2000s, mm. and it all moved to a digital space.
Right.
Those labels moved with it. If you go to iTunes, or you go to Spotify, you go to any of the streaming sites, there's more labels than ever. Hmm. I mean, they try to put you in a box, Nicholas Payton, and they tell me where, what, who sounds
algorithms
like Nicholas Payton.
If, yeah, you like this, then
if you like this, that, you'll do that. Yeah. I mean, if anything, the industry doubled down on that concept of genres and what the artists are supposed to sound
in
like.
In a sense, and then in another sense, like I've done albums in my bedroom, recorded them,
right.
mixed them, mastered them, and put them out digitally myself, which wasn't really possible in the 90s, late 90s, 2000s. So we're kind of like in the Wild West, like it's wild, it's wide open with the internet, and it hasn't really settled yet to see what it's going to be. The part I do love about it, that it has empowered the artist to be directly in touch with their own supporters and to be able to put their own product out on their own labels, as I have the past 5 years,
yeah,
my
right.
own Payton Records label. So that's cool.
And I have a couple questions about that, just about running your own record label as a musician. We'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting back to ancestry, history, all the things we were just talking about, that plays so much into the legacy and storyline of your hometown,
definitely.
New Orleans. Because I can't put my finger on, as a music lover, as somebody who I can't tell you the main style of music that comes out of New Orleans, because there's so much, and
definitely.
And in different ways. How much does the city of New Orleans and the experience that so many different musicians, jazz, blues, rock, rap, have come out of that area, that plays into to what we're talking about tonight?
Yeah, I mean, from Congo Square, which may have been the only place in America where the enslaved Africans were given a platform to practice their rituals, drumming, dance, singing, music, so forth, to artists like the legendary Buddy Bolden, who spurred on cats like Freddie Keppard and Bunk Johnson and King Oliver, who spurred on the first King of Pop, Louis Armstrong, and people like Jelly Roll Morton, mm-hmm. and Sidney Bechet. And then even throughout the history, even in later years, people like Harold Baptiste or Fats Domino or Dave Bartholomew, and these cats invented what has become rock and roll, to, you know, guys like Terrence Blanchard and Donald Harrison and Harry Connick and so forth, to people like myself and Christian Scott and Lil Wayne
and
Cash
so
Money Brothers, Master P. Like, New Orleans has always had its hand.
So diverse.
In the pulse of pop music from the beginning to now.
Because of that, coming from New Orleans and having a rich history of being able to defy genres and push boundaries, is it easy to collaborate when you're coming up with a new sound? Like, because really what you're doing here with the Afro-Caribbean mixtape is you're creating, and I use the word because I can't think of another, a new genre. You know, a concept of music that isn't jazz. It's not pop. It's not hip hop. It's everything. It's a different sound. So is it easier to collaborate with other musicians from New Orleans because you've all had the history of creating new sounds and creating new things together? Or is it something that goes beyond New Orleans and you can pretty much create new music with any musician?
I think it's both. Because if we look at it from a strictly New Orleanian point of view, the only other New Orleans musician on the album is Joe Dyson, who's a drummer. And he's one of the latest in the long line of great New Orleans drummers, from Baby Dodds to, you know, Hurley Riley, Shannon Powell, Adonis Rose, so many great New Orleans drummers. But then we have Vicente Archer, who's been with me since 2002, Kevin Hayes, he's played with me for about that long, or earlier, Daniel Sedonic on percussion, and our newest band member, DJ Ladyfingers, and none of which are from New Orleans, but they embody that spirit of pop music, they embody that spirit of African tribal DNA, which I call it, which is the code that sort of underlies most of the music that we hear in the popular strata. So you don't have to be New Orleanian to access that, mm-hmm. no more so than you have to be black to play black music, no more so than you have to be Mexican to play mariachi music, no more so than you have to be Chinese to enjoy a noodle or Italian to enjoy pasta. It's just acknowledging where something comes from and tying yourself into that root and tradition if you want to be a part of that lineage.
Are most musicians that you work with, are they this articulate about breaking down the boundaries? Or is music the language that they speak? Because you, I mean, I read your liner notes or, you know, you do things that Tulane
words
do.
I'm a words conscious person. You're definitely up on the box. I don't know if every musician is that, but I'm just that kind of person outside of the music. Like, words are very important to me. Mm-hmm. So what words I choose to voice whatever expression or emotion are of particular importance.
To tell the story of the music. Yeah.
Nicholas
Payton, my guest, great musician, Grammy Award-winning musician, who is going to be at the Chicago Symphony Center tomorrow night. Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape. It'll be at 8 o'clock at the Symphony Center. We'll take a quick break here. We'll get an update with Rob Martyr. And then we'll come back. And I want to talk about, you've spent your entire life in music.
Pretty much.
We talked about 4 years old, you're picking up the trumpet. Mm-hmm. 11 years old, you're on tour. Mm. I want to know about the life lessons. I want to know about the things that you've picked up, what you've learned, how that has shaped you as a human being.
Cool.
We'll talk about that. Nicholas Payton, my guest at the big table tonight. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. This download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight at the big table, musician Nicholas Payton, trumpet virtuoso, multi-instrumentalist, Grammy Award winner. At the Chicago Symphony Center tomorrow night with his show, Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape. It's at 8 o'clock right here, Michigan Avenue. As we mentioned, I mean, coming out of the, when we went to the news with Rob, I kind of said at the beginning, you start playing trumpet at the age of 4 years old. What does that mean? I mean, when I hear that, you see it all the time in bios, but in your mind, what does it mean to be 4 years old picking up the trumpet?
Yeah, I just wanted to play it. You know, that was the first, and I grew up around music. Both of my parents played music. My mom, a former operatic singer and classically trained pianist. My dad played bass and sousaphone of all sorts. But trumpet, something just called me of that instrument. And New Orleans, obviously having such a rich history of great trumpet players, just something about that instrument spoke to me. So my father, I said I wanted to play trumpet. And he bought me a pocket trumpet, which is a little more compact version of the normal B-flat trumpet we usually see. It's of the oak of what Don Cherry used. So it's about like a third of the size, so you don't tip over when you're four. And I've been playing trumpet pretty much ever since.
When you pick it up and you start playing around with it, mm-hmm. and it's an instrument that a lot of people have probably dabbled with and banned in high school or maybe in grade school, what have mm-hmm. you. But what is it about the instrument that kept you focused? I mean, what was it? Because you could easily see as a kid at 4 years old, at 6 years old, saying, I want to play guitar. I want to do something else. Or I don't want to do music at all. Mm. What was it about this instrument, the trumpet, that kept you involved?
It's interesting. I would say maybe every trumpet player must have, by virtue of picking that instrument and staying with it, some sort of masochistic thing, because
why?
It is the hardest instrument. Like, you can see saxophone players and drummers playing well into their 90s, sounding like they did in their 30s. You don't find too many trumpet players in their 90s at that level. One of the few who I've had the pleasure to work with and see is the great Doc Cheatham, who played until the day he passed. I'm a multi-instrumentalist, so I feel validated to say this. It is the most difficult instrument, just physically, to have metal on one of the most tender parts of your body, your lips, and to blow compressed air through a tiny little tube and to be required to play music.
And to be able to manipulate that. That's crazy.
Night after night. Like, it's crazy.
Hey, there is a lot that goes into it. I mean, when you start to get serious with the instrument, do you have to think about your breathing? Do you have to think about, I mean, you're taking care of your mouth,
man,
things like that?
Justin, what you just said right there, I give lessons to trumpet players in their 30s and 40s who don't understand the breathing. That's your fuel. Because you focus on the lips and everybody's focused on musculature and chops and whatever. The air, that's your fuel. If you don't take a proper breath before you play, then you won't have the fuel to drive your car on the freeway. And that's it. So something that's very elemental and fundamental to our development as babies even is breathing. We find ourselves having to recapture in our older age.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the whole romanticism behind yoga and spirituality and arts and breath. 20, 30, and 40-year-olds learning how to breathe again because we've forgotten how to do it. Same thing with trumpet players. So, yeah, a lot of the work, most chop problems, lip problems have to do with not taking proper breath. And Chicago has a big hand in that. The great, late great Arnold Jacobs, who was a tubist with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, which was housed at where we're playing tomorrow, Orchestra Hall. He taught a lot of the foremost experts in the breath field, people who I've had the pleasure of studying with, like the great Vincent Chickowitz, who played trumpet under Herseth in the CSO Brass, the great Bill Fielder, also the great Vincent Pinzarella.
So there's a whole, I mean, there's a
they all come
whole
out of
area
Jacobs.
About breathing technique.
Just breathing.
Wow.
And I always tell a lot of my, and I'm giving some insider information out for free. There's a two tubists who created a DVD called The Breathing Gem. And it's all just 50 minutes of breathing exercises away from the horn. That will do so much just for improving most brass players' conception of moving when.
Okay, so now you've got the technique down. You understand what it means to play the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about your connection to the instrument and connection to being a musician, the soul of it, the heart of it. What attracted you when you got a little bit older?
Mm.
Now you understand how it works, and like I said, we just went through all that. What was it that kept you going? What was the connection, the love that kept you with the trumpet?
Great question. It's something I believe I've always had with me, but became apparent when I studied with a great trumpeter, Vincent Pinzarella, and his teacher, Arnold Jacob, who wrote a book, I think it's called Wind and Song. But later, Jacob even sort of revised his thought and said, if I was really proper, I would say it's song and wind because it's the song that gets you the wind. So as a trumpet player, you don't know exactly how much you have to tighten your lips to make a high C, how much air you have to take. You hear the note, and the body knows what to do. So the idea is to get out of the way. So the clearer your conception of what you hear, the better you're going to be able to have the facility to execute that. And I think for me, I've always had that on my side, even though technically I didn't maybe have the best teachers early on. I mean, it took me 30 years just to learn how to practice. Because I kind of had a good ear and I could just naturally hear and play better than a lot of my peers. But at a certain point, it became called upon me to do something different if I wanted to really get inside this music and have the longevity. I didn't want to be like certain trumpet players that I saw toppling out at 50, 60 years old and couldn't play anymore, you know, and being on stage and not really be at your best. So I really reevaluated myself in my 30s to try to have a breath of knowledge that would take me.
And that's tremendous for all the kids who would be out there who are trying trumpet or practicing, and they're like, I'm not getting anywhere, I'm not understanding it. To hear you, Nicholas Payton, Grammy Award winner, say you're in your 30s learning
after
how to
Grammys.
after the Grammys,
yeah, relearning
how to relearning how to practice.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So. We've got, I mean, tremendous conversation here. Nicholas Payton, the Grammy Award-winning trumpet player and multi-instrumentalist. He's going to be at the Symphony Center tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. You know, there's that part. And then there's the part, the life of the musician. At 11 years old, you're touring.
Mm-hmm.
You're touring with your family. You're starting to be a touring musician.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that. Talk about, like, the two things. I'll ask the question two ways. One, how amazing it was for an 11-year-old to see the world that way.
Mm.
And then I would say the challenges of an 11-year-old seeing the world that way.
Well, fortunately for me, I was blessed with two parents who instilled certain levels of independence in me early on. They gave me a voice. They allowed me when I was two years old to say what was cool and what was not cool. And I think when I was 11 years old, starting to go on the road, they trusted me to know. I knew the difference between right and wrong. And even if some musicians were trying to coerce me into some area, unsavory areas, that I would have the strength and the fortitude to say, you know, guys, mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. So that was really it. It was their rearing and their forward parenting and their selflessness to allow me to be my own creative being, even though I was their child.
Do you feel at all, I mean, to think about being a prodigy, to be on the road at 11 years old, do you feel like you became an adult too quick? I mean, do you feel like you experienced
in a sense, yeah. But I think I'm experiencing a elongated childhood now. I feel at 43, I feel younger than ever. So this is great because now I have the knowledge of a 40-year-old, but can recapture that spirit of a child. And that's really the hardest thing to maintain, is that love for the music when I first got my trumpet and I took it home. Because there's so many distractions in the world. There's so many things that can take you out of that space. To keep that love, I still have that love. I still have that burning desire.
What gets in the way? What douses that love? Is it money?
The business.
The business?
It could be money, fame, popularity, Grammys. All the accolades that sort of say, oh, you're here and you've arrived.
Keep doing this.
I've never felt that. I feel like I'm just beginning right now. I'm excited about tomorrow night. Like it's my first performance. You know, that like no one can take that away from you.
As an artist, as a creator, someone who continues to defy the genres and push yourself and push the boundaries, does that only apply to art? Do you find yourself as a human being thinking the same way? Is your brain sort of in a position where you're always pushing boundaries?
Art and musicianship are somewhat even like the byproducts. It's ultimately the life of the person that matters most, the life of a being. And then that sort of translates into and permeates all the other facets of your life.
Can you, as a musician, as a esteemed musician, can you listen to the music that you've done or the music that you've written or performed and know where you were mm-hmm. as a human being?
Definitely. Some things for that very reason I can't listen to.
Really?
Because it's that honest. But I think for the most part I've made honest music and music that I'm proud of, even from my first album. Like I waited for many years because I had pretty much all the major labels hitting me up to sign me from being like 15, 16 years old. And I put that off until like 19, 20, till I felt I was ready, till I felt like I had served tutelage under enough. And it wasn't like I felt like I'm a bad cat right now, I'm ready. But just that I had learned enough that it would be an honest, respectable first effort, you know?
And it makes me think too, just about, you know, do you have to, discipline and censoring yourself in the way that the discipline of being prepared and ready to create. Mm. But at the same time, you know, if you're not ready, are you censoring yourself as an artist?
That too, and maybe being the victim of too much ability and talent. So censoring yourself in a way where you're like editing, not putting everything out there all the time, which in this very social media, YouTube-driven era of getting likes and going viral, you have cats doing all kinds of things which I feel are not very artistic or musical for garnering attention. You know what I mean? So to have the trust in yourself and the belief and the artistic sensibility to know when to withhold, to not just put everything out there, every single beat, every single bar, to have that level of restraint, to know when to let something go, when to play something and when not to play something. That's a very learned behavior, you know, when not to play.
When not to play. Tomorrow night, you're on stage. As you mentioned, you have ties to Orchestra Hall, Symphony mm-hmm. Center. You have not only played in tremendous clubs around the country, but you've played on tremendous stages. Mm-hmm. For you to be on stage, and you look forward to that, name the one part of it that you're looking forward to the most. Like, and I don't mean like, oh, it's going to be fun, I can't wait to be here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're going to be on stage for an hour plus, 2 hours, whatever it is. What's the one part for Nicholas Payton that you always look forward to in a concert like tomorrow night that you're going to be on stage?
I'm there to touch people and make them move. And even though Orchestra Hall is not necessarily set up to dance, but I want to see them dancing. If I can't even see their feet moving, at least dancing in their eyes. Coming from New Orleans, in a tradition where people second line and at any moment there can be a parade breaking down the street, I want that sensibility to always be present in my music, regardless of the environment.
Trumpeter, multi-instrumentalist, Grammy Award winner, Nicholas Payton. He will be on stage tomorrow night. Nicholas Payton and the Afro-Caribbean Mixtape, 8 o'clock at the Symphony Center Orchestra Hall, right here on Michigan Avenue. Nicholas Payton, a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being my guest at the Big Table tonight.
Thank you, Justin.